to Your Career Doctors on Grapevine Radio. I'm Barbara Jackson, your host, and I'm joined in the studio by our co-host, Lee Miller.
And we're Your Career Doctors.
Your Career Doctors is all about taking control of your career.
It's about providing you with the information, contacts, skills, and tools you need, both on the show and on our website, yourcareerdoctors.com.
It's also about providing access to experts and to workshops. Career Doctors is partnering with Macau to bring two workshops to a city near you. We'll be holding these public workshops in New York City, Philadelphia, Boston, and D.C. in March and April on Negotiation Plus for Women and Critical Communication Skills for Women. And we've added an extra date in Utah. So go to our website, yourcareerdoctors.com, and check on the city nearest you.
Today we're going to talk with Richard Oliver about how those skills have shaped his career and his work with the UNDGO. Welcome, Richard, and thanks for being our guest.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Well, we're delighted to have you with us. Let me introduce Richard Oliver. He's the Associate Director and in the Coordination Capacity and Support, and I'm sure I've got that name wrong, at UNDG, which stands for United Nations Development Group. Welcome, Richard, and maybe you can tell us what your real title is and what it means.
It's easier to say the title, I think you basically got it right, than to explain what it means. Basically, the United Nations is made up of a number of different organizations, and to be truly effective in the 21st century, we have to act as if we were one organization, a virtual one UN. And my unit, the Development Group Office, is responsible for the reform of the UN at country level to enable all of those bits of the UN system to work as if they were one organization. My job is to make sure that they have what they need to do that and do it right.
Well, that's quite a job. Now, I have to tell our listeners, Richard and I have known each other probably for a good 10 years, and this is probably maybe the third job that I've known Richard to be in. And the reason that I've asked Richard to join us here today is not just because he has a fabulous job that's really interesting and we can talk about that for a long time, but because one of Richard's hallmarks of success is his ability to influence people to do things that, first of all, they might not have considered as even possible, but secondly, to get them to do things as he's doing right now, to make a one UN, which is not necessarily in their best interest. And so when we think about people who are really sort of superstars in the influencing skills area, Richard is one of them. And I'm wondering if Richard could tell us a little bit about how he decided to even come to the UN. That's not where you started. You weren't a son of a UN person or...
Actually, I cut my teeth as a poverty and civil rights lawyer in the American South. And as a Yankee in the South, back in the day, it was very clear that nobody wanted to hear from my clients, nor from me. And I had to learn on my feet to get the attention of the judge, the jury, the other lawyers, to hold that attention and to help them to see other possibilities than the ones that they had clearly in their minds. Now, that worked very well, and ultimately I ended up getting pressured to go into politics locally. But I didn't think that was a terribly good idea, and I was pretty tired by that point of working to bring about social change on the retail level, and I thought I'd give it a try wholesale.
So the UN came to you?
Actually, they did on a several-year-old job application just the very day that I had been asked to make a firm decision whether or not I was going to run for public office.
Wow, talk about good timing. Those of us who want world peace are glad you chose this job. So what is influencing like? Most of us have seen enough Perry Mason or Law and Order shows that we can at least imagine what your job might have been like as a poverty attorney. But what is influencing like on the international level?
It's really the same. And I'm sure there are many other ways to do it. I bring to my work what I developed over many, many years, and that is passion and sincerity and identification with the other person. So, you know, I would simply imagine, ask you to imagine yourself having only 30 seconds, just 30 seconds flat, to show that you really care about what you're talking about and what it could do for the people you're talking to. And then prepare yourself to say that and say it with some real passion. So it's about honing the message down to its real core and finding a way to deliver it with personal passion.
Well, you know, we talk a lot, Lee and I talk a lot about passion and how absolutely essential that is for people's success, at convincing people to do anything. Because if you don't believe it yourself, don't have a lot of energy, you're obviously not going to be able to convince others. But the other thing that we talk about is this notion of the you perspective, which is really coming at an issue from the point of view of those you're wishing to persuade, mm-hmm. so that all you have to do is not convince them that you're right and they should adopt your view, but take their point of view and figure out how to move the pieces around within their own environment. And I'm imagining in your career you've spent an awful lot of time having to reinvent arguments in words that are local and in environments that are local, even though they're achieving your goals, which are completely different.
Yeah, again, I learned just through trial and error as a poverty lawyer. I found that my clients, many of whom were illiterate, didn't have a clue about what they were facing in the criminal justice system. And half of my job was simply about translating that system into concepts and words that they could work with to make their own decisions about what they wanted to do, empowering other people. Mm-hmm. And I've carried that onto the international stage, where I work to assure that everybody can see a positive vision of change for themselves and their organizations, and therefore will be more ready to join in the effort rather than resist.
So when you go to a new country and mm-hmm. you're visiting with the resident representative there, which is the UN's person back in the field, and you're not familiar with their culture, let us say,
mm-hmm.
how do you go about gathering the data that you need in order to say this in language that speaks to them? And what's your first step of understanding other people's perceptions?
Well, first off, we always have people who have walked in the other person's shoes with us. So we don't go blind. Secondly, to answer your question directly, the first thing that we do once we get to a new country is to sit down with the country team and ask them to tell us what their perceptions are, what their concerns are, how they think negotiations with the government are going to go, and we work from there.
So in terms that our listeners might be used to hearing, you're practicing active listening skills, you're gathering data based on people's past practice, you're asking others, you're asking them directly, what matters to you, how do you perceive this, rather mm-hmm. than telling people how you perceive it and how it's going to be.
Exactly. I was just in North Korea about a month ago, and there our team had no idea what the government's priorities were for national development. They'd never been told. It was a state secret. And
but not really. It's just that their people hadn't bothered, their managers hadn't let the information out.
Well, they had been so successful at not letting it out that we didn't know. And there was a lot of concern about whether we would be allowed to know what their priorities were, and without that, how we would negotiate
right.
with them. If you don't know what the other side wants,
right, that's true.
Very hard to negotiate. And we then, based on that, redid all of our materials to present to the government, to explain ourselves in terms that we knew wouldn't upset them. We didn't use words like reform, which is a negative word. Instead, we used adjustment, and so on and so forth, and prepared for the different scenarios.
But I'm curious for you to tell our listeners. I'm guessing that even though you were more than prepared, in fact, looking to prepare a new platform for beginning the negotiation and the materials that you were going to use in the negotiation, you were not necessarily flexible in the outcome. You had an outcome in mind, and that part, those goals weren't going to change. But how you got there, the path you took, the mm-hmm. tools that you used, that was flexible for you.
Yes, and we had something very powerful on our side that the other side wasn't familiar with.
What was that?
And that was the skill at participatory conversations and learning that enabled us to draw them out in a relaxed and open way.
Now, is this a cultural difference? Is it a technical difference? Why did they not have this at their disposal?
It had never been done in North Korea before.
So it was a cultural difference. It was a new tool for them.
And we debated, should we have a formal delegation-to-delegation meeting as they're used to, or should we try what we know works best to draw people out, to make them feel comfortable, and to have an open dialogue, which is most likely to result in everyone finding common ground. And we decided to take the risk of going with the more open approach, and they loved it.
That's great. So you have a much stronger relationship. First of all, you have a relationship with them.
Yes.
And you have a stronger relationship than the day that you walked in. And
mm-hmm.
the next time you go there, you'll be starting in a very different place. New understandings, fundamental tactics that are different than they might have been had you gone the more traditional delegation-to-delegation route.
Exactly. We stayed away from positions completely.
So what? Tell our listeners, we've got about 3 minutes, tell our listeners the one thing that sort of stands out in your mind, in your long career, the one thing that sort of stands out in your mind as the most challenging or unusual or successful, depending on what really stands out in your mind, situation that you've had to use your influence skills to affect an outcome. Tell us that influencing story, Richard.
The most. I suppose it was my contribution to preventing a race war. I won't go into which country and when, but this particular country where I was living as the UN representative was squaring off to have a race war. The population was pretty evenly divided, but not quite, so one race always ended up winning the elections, which the other race found quite unacceptable. And to make a long story short, I managed to position the UN as the broker and facilitator of the constitutional reform and election support processes, even though we had no real power. It served the interests of both the government and the ruling party and the opposition to have us active in the mediation. It also served the interests of the great powers to have us chairing their group for support from the outside. It was an extremely difficult process. I only realized how difficult it was one day when I was chairing a joint donor-government forum, and I realized that everybody around the table, except me, had written instructions from their capital. I was basically doing it myself. It was an incredible experience of having the trust and confidence of people of all persuasions that enabled me to play a role that I had no power to back up. It was just pure influence, and it worked.
That's a great story, and I think our listeners can really understand from that story that you don't need to be the boss, you don't need to be the guy with the biggest bat, that you need to be the person who can use their skills in the most resourceful way to influence the situation, and that can be anything from getting your kid to go to bed on time to stopping a race war. So I'd like to thank you for this interview today. And when we come back from our break, our listeners can find out more about improving their influencing, negotiating, and communicating skills at our workshop. And we'll be back in 2 minutes. Thanks. Welcome back to Your Career Doctors on Grapevine Radio. I'm your host, Barbara Jackson, and I'm here with our co-host, Lee Miller.
That was certainly a great interview, and we can learn a lot about the various skills that Richard talked about on his job, and we're going to learn a lot about that at the upcoming programs that we're doing and that Barbara talked about earlier, the powerful tools for successful women, or successful tools for powerful women. Either way you want to describe it. It's going to be a great program. We're going to have my Negotiation Plus for Women, based on A Woman's Guide to Successful Negotiating, the book I wrote with my daughter, which was named one of the 50 best books for professional women by Atlanta Monthly. And we'll also have Critical Communication Skills for Women, done by the New Harbor Group. This will teach you how to deal with those tough situations, how to deliver your message better, and it's going to be a great program. The program is going to be in 4 cities, New York, Philadelphia, Boston, D.C., and actually a 5th city has been added. It'll be in Provo, Utah, in May. So we've got a great program. And for our listeners, you will be able to go to our website, yourcareerdoctors.com, and if you're one of our listeners who signed up for the newsletter and as a premium member of the YourCareerDoctors.com program, you'll be able to get a 15% discount on the program, provided you sign up by March 10th.
Thanks, Lee. I know that I'm really excited about our program, and Richard, I think, might be joining us in New York because he's right there. If he's in town, he said he'd stop by.
Well, that would be terrific if he could
do
that.
He's a really great guy, and he certainly has an interesting job. I've known him, as I said, for many years, and I can't imagine when I think about him not thinking about somebody who's a master influencer. And Richard talked a little bit about the skills and opportunities that led him to the level of influenceability or influencing character that he has now. But how is it that you think that most new careerists build their influencing skills?
Well, I think most of them do what comes natural to them. They make a lot of mistakes, and hopefully they learn from those mistakes, and hopefully coming to our seminars, you'll avoid some of those mistakes. But I think too few of them seek the help either through training, or coaching, or some other form of mentoring that will really help them avoid those mistakes.
And in fact, you have a self-assessment that I think we can put on our website that might help people to identify where their areas of strength and weakness are.
I do. I have a self-assessment that we developed when we wrote A Woman's Guide to Successful Negotiating that actually either a man or a woman can use to measure how good they are with particular negotiating skills. So, yes, we could put that up on our website.
And that's great. And we usually encourage people to do that assessment about every 6 months or so, particularly if they're active in a job rather than, you know, looking for a job or thinking about getting a job, because as you practice, your abilities change. It's not like a personality test where you're just, you know, one thing all your life.
No, absolutely. The more you practice, the better you're going to be, and you should focus on the skills that you're weak on and practicing them so you get better at those.
And one of the things that both Lee and I agree is one of the most important things that you can do is learn how to use the you perspective. And Richard and I talked a little bit about that, and you heard his great stories. But let's ask Lee how important the you perspective is. In fact, I guess you ought to start about explaining what the you perspective is.
Sure. The you perspective is a concept I use to help teach people how to influence others. It's about figuring out what will motivate those other people to do what you want them to do. That's the key. Normally we think about you perspective when people think about it, they think is, what would I do if I were the other person? Well, that's really not what the you perspective is. You're not the other person. You're yourself. You see the world through your own experience. experiences, through your own culture, through who you are and what you value. And the you perspective is trying to figure out how that other person sees the world, how they see the situation. That way, you'll be able to motivate them and to do what you want. And that's the goal of negotiating, to get people, and influencing in general, to get people to do what you want them to do.
And we heard Richard talk about that. We heard him talk about not just passion and sincerity and identifying with the other person, but also practicing active listening skills. And just, you know, walking in other people's shoes was his way of saying new perspective. But then he defined it as asking others what they wanted, asking others what was important to them, and really understanding what their value system was. He talked an awful lot when he would go in about how when he would go into foreign countries, understanding people's true value systems so they could operate within them rather than trying to apply his values into a situation where they had no applicability, really.
Yeah, and we do, as Americans, we do view the world differently than people who come from other cultures. Time is one of those things that we really view very differently. To Americans, time is money, right? And we operate that way. In other countries, in many other countries, you have to spend time and develop a relationship before you can even begin to actually influence them and negotiate with them. So, you know, that different view of time, the different view of relationships that people have are intricate aspects of the you perspective, and understanding that will help you get what you want much more often.
Right. Even understanding the concept of punctuality as it applies in different cultures. Forget time is money. Just understanding that a meeting that's supposed to schedule at 8 o'clock, if I'm 8:05 in New York, I'm probably not going to get the chance to have the meeting. But if I'm 8:05 in some other countries, I'm like 2 hours early, and that's what is expected.
And you have to build in those times. You can't set another meeting.
Right.
In certain countries, if you schedule a meeting for 9 o'clock, it's supposed to be an hour meeting, you better leave till noon because it won't start on time and it probably won't end on time. So if you schedule another meeting right back to back, you can either miss the other meeting or have to leave this meeting before you've accomplished what you want to. So you need to understand, that's part of the you perspective, understanding how different people are going to behave and what's accepted normal for them and what would frankly insult them. They would probably be insulted if they were in the middle of a meeting in many countries that started an hour late, which would be normal, and you just got up and said, I have to leave, I've got another meeting. That would be considered rude. It might prevent you from getting accomplished what you wanted even down the line.
Exactly. So the you perspective means it's a very complex thing. You're going to hear us talking a lot more about it in the upcoming weeks because it is, in fact, the title of Lee's new book, You Perspective, or UP, Power, Influence, and the You Perspective. But I'm going to ask Lee, because we're running out of time for this show, I'm going to ask Lee for a prescription for us for this week.
Okay. You cannot move your career forward without the help of others. So learning how to more effectively influence others is a good investment of your time and your money.
And, you know, I think something that goes along with that prescription is sort of a corollary one around communication, because one of the things that's become clear to me is that even if you have extraordinary influencing skills, those skills are only obvious to others if your communication skills are also top-notch. So they really do go hand in hand. And if you only focus on three things in your career, if I were going to encourage our listeners to make three investments, it would be in finding out where their passion lies. And if that means they have to go out and do an assessment that they pay for, do it. There's nothing better for you than finding out where your passion lies, and there's nothing worse than spending your life in a career that you hate. The second thing I'd advise them to do is pay for skills. And the two that I'd encourage them to pay to improve are negotiating and communicating. So this has been your Career Doctors, Barbara Jackson and Lee Miller at Grapevine Radio. Thanks for listening. And remember, it's your life, your career, your choice.